As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pot on the Tine, your go-to Newcastle United podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on the show this week, the Sky cameras come to St James's Park, but leave with Newcastle still searching for that first win of the season. The Boo Boys were out for Bruce again, but not with both barrels it seems. And we eavesdropped on The Athletic's Shearer-Andy Carroll chat. What's next for the Benchum Basher? Hello, I'm Taylor Payne, and welcome back to the podcast that just keeps ticking along. Yes, it's another episode of Pot on the Tine, and joining me, as always, are The Athletic's Newcastle United correspondent, Chris Woff, and our senior writer, Mr. George Culkin. How the devil are you, chaps? Chris, have you managed to figure out how to use the club's Wi-Fi yet, so you can ask questions in press conferences? Or is that still beyond you?
Hi, Taylor. I have just about worked out. Thankfully, you can hardwire in like an Ethernet cable at St James, because otherwise the internet is pretty crap. So I did ask a question. I did hear the answer this time around. So yes, I am tickety boo. Thank you. Just ticking along nicely. How about yourself?
I'm not too bad at all. I'm all right. It's been a decent week. The sun's shining. And Mr. Sunshine himself, George Culkin, is with us as well. George, how are you?
Hello to both of you. Yes, I'm sitting in exactly the same seat as I was last week. I am about to say the same old bollocks to the two same old people that I've been saying for weeks and weeks and months. So if the frames of reference for that is Newcastle United, then I'm doing absolutely everything that I can hope for, really, aren't I?
Absolutely. We wouldn't want it any other way, would we?
I'm ticking over, staying exactly where I am. So that's, what more could I want?
Excellent stuff. Well, The Athletic are still offering 33% off new subscriptions to podcast listeners at the minute. So get yourself over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to take advantage of that special offer. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, chaps. Friday night football. Friday night saw the Sky Sports cameras rock up to St James's Park to witness Newcastle take on Leeds in a game that was considered pivotal by fans and pundits alike. But before we get into the match proper, chaps, let's have a little chat about that Friday night football build-up. They did get some praise from a lot of fans and also from George as well for hosting a discussion with a select group of supporters. And they were quite even-handed in their interview with Steve Bruce as well, and their discussions on the behind-the-scenes situation at Newcastle. What did you think of the whole Friday night football fiasco, Chris?
Well, I mean, George was the one who was watching it from home. I've seen the clips on social media, and I did think that it was good that the supporters were actually given that voice, rather than sometimes where we maybe hear some pundits on certain national radio stations or TV stations or the like, and basically that not actually listening to what Newcastle supporters think and feel. And obviously all Newcastle fans think and feel different things, but prominent voices within the fan base at least gives you some indication of what people on the ground think. And so to see Carragher and Gary Neville interviewing fans just outside Nine Bar was great to see. And obviously George can say a bit more about exactly what was said within it and how it sort of came about.
Well, yes, I mean, I just think that instead of people on the TV and radio saying, well, what is it that Newcastle fans actually want? I mean, I don't get it. Steve Bruce is doing a great job. People actually took the time to bother asking Newcastle fans what it is they want.
Wow, amazing.
And funnily enough, you then get the answer. So, and of course, as Chris says, you know, you're talking about thousands and thousands of people and, you know, there are all shades of opinion, but there was an attempt to try and put into context what the feeling is at the moment around the club and why, you know, why Leeds were seen as sort of important and so on and so forth. And I just, you know, I just think that's really important. Instead of pretending you don't know or not understanding, make an effort to understand. And, you know, as you would expect and hope when our fans are talk to, they come across very, very well, very articulate, represented by a couple of friends of this podcast in Alex Hurst and Thomas Concannon, and others, and they just explained what it's been like watching the football, what it's, you know, like having an ownership that's checked out, and what it's like having a manager in Steve Bruce who, you know, so often doesn't chime with supporters in terms of A, what he says, and B, then what he does in terms of the team. And it was just very refreshing, and they listened. And, you know, that's what you want. You don't just want pundits to tell you what you think. I want them to be informed and informative. Yeah. And, you know, Neville and Carragher, to their great credit, I mean, they've been brilliant on, you know, Monday Night Football and stuff like that over the years, and genuinely have added to the gaiety of the nation and to the way that we think about football and look at football. But it's just great for them to listen and kind of be part of the conversation in that sense. So, no, all credit to them, and certainly all credit to the fans that took part.
Good stuff. Yeah, it was excellent. And, you know, it's really nice to hear them asking fans. You know, it's revolutionary, isn't it? Imagine that, asking football fans what they think about football. Whatever next, George?
No, you're right. But, I mean, it's not something that I ever, you know, it's not something I ever take for granted. I mean, I tend to think that, I don't mean that we're different, but, you know, we live in Newcastle. And, you know, certainly I've been watching the, you know, used to make me laugh when sometimes the paper I used to work for, it was like a London-based broadsheet and stuff like that, because the person that reported on them was someone who's lived in the city or lived in the northeast all my life. And so I kind of, and, you know, I've got friends and family who go or who've decided to walk away, or, you know, both and things like that. So it's kind of very easy for me to sort of tap into that because I'm feeling it every day and I'm around it every day. But nothing boils the piss more rapidly and with greater violence than when people claim not to understand what it is that fans want, because your first job should be to understand and to ask the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, eventually some football did break out, and it was a fairly exciting game for the neutral. About 40 attempts on goal all in all, and Steve Bruce's men managed to eke out a 1-1 draw, and actually maybe could have won it later on as well. Winless at this stage of the season and playing against the Leeds team that, Chris, they only had one fit centre-back. Is a point good enough?
If you'd have asked me before the game, I'd have said no. If you'd have asked me after 20 minutes, I'd have laughed in your face and said there's absolutely no chance in a million years Newcastle are going to get a point after this game. And then by the end of it, a point was probably a fair result, I think. Other than, I mean, Leeds could have been 3 or 4-0 up, but Newcastle were the better side in the second half. I think that once they shifted the formation, which we'll go on to in a bit, I think that Leeds never really adjusted after that. But the fact that it's six games in all competitions, but 5 Premier League games in, and Newcastle only have 2 points, that is the concern there. And they've now played Leeds, Southampton and West Ham at home, and they've only taken 2 points from those games. They obviously didn't take anything at Villa and then at Man United as well. So you go into these next two matches against Watford and Wolves and just with no form whatsoever, still unsure how you're going to find that way to a victory. And so really no, Newcastle needed a win, but in the context of how the game unfolded, I think that a point was certainly, as I say, after 20 minutes, I just couldn't see how that was going to be an eventuality.
Yeah, I mean, it was two teams, no defence, was it? And it was like a basketball game. It was back and forwards for the first sort of for the first 35, 40 minutes, and it was breakneck pace. Chris, you've been involved in a stat-based article as well with Mark Carey recently. What was all that about?
Yeah, so last week we were sort of looking at this was pre-Leeds, the point where Newcastle had conceded 12 goals in four games. So Mark Carey and I sort of looked at the defence and why Newcastle had the worst defence at that stage in the Premier League, and just looking at all the statistics and the fact they've only kept four clean sheets in 2021, three of them are against teams who were relegated, two of them were sort of back-to-back at the end of last season. They're just that defensively over time, season on season under Steve Bruce, the defence has been regressing in terms of they're conceding more and more goals, and that has only upticked even further this season. And that's the issue Newcastle have at the moment. They've twice scored two goals at home and didn't win either of those two games. They're just, if you're a team like Newcastle, and part of the reason why in theory before they were playing a five-man defence was to try and keep the opposition out, but at the moment they're just all over the place, and so teams are getting loads of opportunities. Leeds in the first half an hour, the amount of times they got in behind Matt Ritchie on one side, the amount of times they went through the middle and the gaps. I mean, there was the same move three times against Newcastle on Friday night, which was Rafinha would break in down the right, get to the byline, the defence would then rush back, and then there'd be a massive gap at the edge of the box, and Rafinha would pull it back. And I think there was at one point where Click shot wide, and there was a couple of other Phillips shot wide with exactly the same effort, and it was the same mistakes over and over and over again. And that is a real concern with Newcastle, because they don't look like scoring enough. They are scoring goals, but they don't look like scoring enough to combat the fact that they are just conceding far too many.
Can I say something? I mean, I'm going to make a very, very facile point, but if Newcastle are going to be shit, then I prefer them to be shit I prefer this kind of shit than last season's shit. I mean, I suppose is what I'm saying. You know, actually, a game of basketball, I prefer to watch a game of basketball than the football that Newcastle play.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but again, I realise that's a very facile point, and I am very concerned about the fact that they're not winning games. And you know, as Chris says, if they don't win these games, where do they win? How do they win? I mean, who do they beat? Norwich probably, but that's that's only because Norwich are even worse than Newcastle are. But it's yeah. it is alarming. I mean, people were sort of saying on Twitter, "Oh, this is really exciting." It's like, no, it's not. It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying seeing them get torn into like this, and all the space that they're leaving, and all the same kind of stuff. But
Steve Bruce enjoyed it though.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Good.
I'm pleased.
Nice from having a nice Friday night out, isn't it?
Half time, I was feeling it could have been a lot worse, but you know. So yeah, it was a very juvenile point, but anyway,
that's okay. I was going to say, Chris, I mean, you can prove anything with stats these days, can't you? But overwhelmingly, at the minute, you can use them to prove that Newcastle are shit.
Yes, you certainly can. Unfortunately.
Yeah, and there was a little bit of animosity in the crowd towards the manager, wasn't there? But I mean, let's be honest, we were probably expecting it to be a lot worse, especially after, you know, the doomsday scenario. Leeds go 1-0 up with 75 possession after 20 minutes. I think we were expecting worse than that. And Chris, you sort of wrote about this from the press box, and Michael Walker wrote about it from the point of view of the Strawberry Corner as well. And what was that feeling like inside the ground when Leeds went 1-0 up? Because I think it kind of wasn't as bad as what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was a really, really strange atmosphere on Friday night. And initially the plan was actually that I was going to be in the press box and George was going to be in the Strawberry Corner, but poor Ben was ill on Friday, so we had to have Michael Walker. We had a substitute, but basically we had an improvement on who would have been there, and so George was George's
Jesus
bench.
Chris, all right. Kick a man while he's down. I've had a fire there.
Oh, my God.
I've had a horrible cold. Basically, I woke up after the Great North Run, and I was just full of cold, and I've been full of cold a week. But no, it was sort of my idea. But yeah, annoyingly, Chris and Michael sort of delivered it very well, which I was a bit pissed off about.
Oh, George, come on! But jealousy will get you nowhere.
I was gonna sit in the Strawberry Corner, and so to be be part of it and all that. It was obviously pretty noisy throughout. I mean, you could hear it coming through over the telly. It never quite. I mean, there are two things. I mean, firstly, I do always think that there is this tendency, particularly at Newcastle, when everybody, it's building up to be this massive, massive thing, waiting for it.
Yeah,
I think people take a step back at that point and sort of think, well, you know, there's almost that sort of thing about not wanting that. I'm not using the word disloyalty, but it's not doing this in public. You know, it is on
telly.
This
was similar to what you were talking about last week, where you were talking about them not wanting to kind of air your dirty laundry in public.
Yeah, I just think it. But the other thing is that I think the game was almost too chaotic, even for Newcastle. You know, so in other words, if Leeds had scored that goal and it had been one-way traffic and, you know, maybe they got a second, then it would have built up and built up and built up. But because it was that stupid basketball thing, it sort of seemed, from my perspective, it seemed to just suck away some of that sort of atmosphere, because it was too sort of engrossing as a sort of daft end-to-end. I mean, Leeds, I mean, I know that they only had one centre-half, and I know they've not started the season, you know, very well in terms of results and performances compared to last season. But my God,
they're still a good team.
There's just astonishing the way they play.
Yeah. It is breakneck, isn't it?
The thing about the atmosphere was that there was that, and I think that you're right, that there was people were almost distracted because there was so much going on the pitch. And you also have to remember, we have to remind ourselves that a lot of the most angry supporters have already walked away for a start. So I think there's still that element where they're not necessarily in the ground. But it was also strange in that you would have sort of pockets of chants about that we want Brucey out, or talking about his Sunderland links and the likes of that. And then in the next breath, it would be encouragement towards the team. It would be songs about the team, or Sam Maximan would do something, and then there would be positivity. So you could see, because Newcastle weren't so far behind that they were completely out of the game, I think that fans didn't want to fully turn in that sense. And so it was there were some loud moments at some point. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And it was certainly Gallagher Corner and the Gallagher in general was where the majority, at least that I could hear, of the anti-Bruce sentiment came from. And it came, as I say, it came in waves almost throughout the game. And at various different levels. But fans wanted to stick behind the team, and they desperately wanted them to get a positive part. I think it was the same at Man United last week, in terms of the fans didn't turn until the game was really out of sight, and then that's when they turned in the way. But so this idea that it negatively affects the team, I don't think it is negatively affecting the team fully, because there is still that positivity, and fans are trying to show that positivity. And it's the issue they've got is with the ownership and with the manager in general. It's not with the team. They are sticking with the team, and so it's a very strange dynamic, and it's hard to explain unless you're in the stadium at that point, because, as I say, it comes in waves and it comes at different levels throughout the game.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Chris as well, how many times this week did you read the word or hear the word toxic used about the atmosphere at St. James's Park and what it could potentially become if things didn't go right? Everyone was saying if it didn't go right, the atmosphere was going to be toxic. Bruce would have real bother on his hands, you know. And again, like through the week, the manager had put his foot in it a little bit in pretty much press conferences, talking about the club ticking along and he wishes he had better players and all this sort of stuff. But I don't think that atmosphere ever got to that point where it became that word, toxic, which is what we'd heard all week. So, I mean, did Steve Bruce add to this at all with those comments during the week, or was that, do you think people weren't really that bothered about that?
So the comments that you're referring to, which very amusingly, and I did not hear these at the game, but Michael Walker being in the stand, this is why it was good having someone in the press box in the stand, was the chant from Newcastle fans was, "We're Newcastle United and we're ticking along." And that was in reference to Steve Bruce talking in the pre-match press conference, and he was basically asked about his position and what his remit is at the club at the moment, to which he responded with, "I hope I can keep the club just ticking along and make sure that the club stays where it is and we maintain our Premier League status." And essentially,
he's like a substitute teacher, isn't he? He's like a substitute teacher who's been drafted in to the unruly class who need looking after until their exam time. You know, I'll just keep them ticking along until their exams. Well, God almighty.
I mean,
inspiring.
We've sort of moved beyond the point where, I suppose, a year or 18 months ago, where it was all about progress. And at one point, actually, Steve Bruce, a question that was worded on this ticking over afterwards, where the follow-up was basically, when you talk about ambition and things like that, and he actually responded and said, "I didn't mention ambition," which was strange in itself, but what he's trying, I think, to explain is that he's trying to now lower expectations and to try and show that this is... Basically, Newcastle haven't really progressed in over the course of the time that he's been here. They don't look likely to, because he didn't get the players that he wanted during the summer, and I think he's just trying to basically... say that in the position that we're in, we're doing all right in that sense. And although I can sort of empathise with him to a certain extent as to where he's come from there, it sort of just crystallises the reason as to why Newcastle fans, some Newcastle fans just think, well, why are we bothering? Why are we bothering if this is all the time? I know George had a slightly different opinion on it, and I can see where he's coming from on this as well, George. You thought that you actually thought it was not refreshing, but you thought it was good to actually hear the manager say.
Oh my God, it's about as refreshing as last year's, what? I don't know. Last year's what?
Christmas dinner.
It's about as refreshing as last year's Christmas dinner, Taylor. But it's actually honest. It's the stuff that we've been saying. It's the stuff that fans been saying. It's like, come on, this isn't a club that's trying to get better. This isn't a club that's pushing for the top eight, top six. This isn't a club that's doing anything other than, you know, it's that phrase, existing to exist. And at least Steve Bruce has come out and said it. Now, I cannot for a moment imagine, believe that the people above him are happy that he said it, but it's true. This is what the club is doing. It's been the case for years, come on. It's been this way the whole time under Mike Ashley, hasn't it? You know, it just has, but at least he's come out and said it. And they've just gone through a transfer window when they've made one permanent signing. And you know, that's it's a matter of fact. The club have taken a gamble on that being enough and that being good enough. They're not straining for anything. They're not striving for anything. It's unusual for the manager to actually come out and admit that. But he has, and I think at least that's honest. It's not an honesty that any of us want to hear, but it completely chimes with what most of us think. I mean, the dangerous thing is, what the bloody hell does that do for players? I mean, you know, suddenly, Joe Willock's just joined the club and signed a long-term contract, and now his manager's talking about ticking over and being where the same place where they were this time, you know, this time last year, whatever, you know. It's like this, the foundations of the whole thing start to shake at this point, but it's accurate.
You could put like two or three things after that and keep them ticking over, and then .. until we get relegated, or until we get taken over, or until Mike Ashley pisses off, or until I get the sack. You know, that's basically where it is, isn't it? It's like a choose your own adventure game. That's where it is at the minute. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Take over until something happens. But Chris, back to the football. There was a slightly positive response from Newcastle, though, after Leeds went 1-0 up, and it looked as though the 5-3-2 was abandoned again. Now we who had
here we go.
Who had 5-3-2 abandoned bingo? Who had the Leeds game on their bingo sheet for that?
4 1/3 games in.
4 1/3 games into the season, we have abandoned our tactical approach to the season. Fantastic stuff. Are Bruce and Jones looking to change things up tactically, Chris? Do you think this is going to be something which is going to change for the long term now, or was it just a response to what was happening in the game?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how Newcastle line up at Watford, because we spoke about this. I think Taylor, you and I spoke about this in the very first podcast back this season, and that the Newcastle's entire policy in the transfer market, yes, they didn't sign all the players they wanted to in the end, but was basically driven about the, around the fact they were going to play with 5-3-2. They'd played it since after the Brighton game, the 3-0 loss in March. They've played 5-3-2 throughout. It worked towards the end of last season, and so it was almost like we're sticking with it because it's worked. They did it before that with the formation with the split strikers, and then it came to this. And we'd said at that point that even people in the round the club said were concerned, because as soon as this goes wrong,
yeah,
they'll probably get binned. Well, half an hour into the game against Leeds, Newcastle changed the formation. They went them over 4-3-3. Isaac Hayden, who again was playing as a right centre-back, was moved into his natural position of a defensive midfielder and suddenly looked like a far better player playing that position. Newcastle looked more comfortable. And so
had a bit of a tussle with Mike Dean, though, didn't he, in that position?
he did, yeah. Mike Dean did his level best to try and
foul. Did a good job on him, didn't he, Mike Dean? That was fantastic bit of McAlealy-style spoiling in the middle of the park there. Just...
But I mean,
sorry, Chris. Go on.
I have had reservations about the formation for a while, and I do think that it needs a refresh and needs a change. My concern is, and Steve Bruce even sort of intimated, because I asked him about this after the game, and he sort of intimated that the reason they'd stuck with 5-3-2 was because of results, was one of the things that he said within it, and that's been the way almost throughout his tenure as manager. And it's this idea that 4-3-3 worked against Leeds, but it worked against a Leeds side who are chaotic and that there is space everywhere. Is 4-3-3 the answer going forward in future games? It might be. I'm not saying that it isn't. I just think it needs to be, rather than it just worked for the best part of an hour against Leeds to get Newcastle back into that match. Is it the actual thought process of this is what we're going to switch to going forward? And I'm sort of writing a piece looking at formations and this to go up later this week, but Will at Watford on Saturday, is he going to go back to 5-3-2? I'd be surprised if he goes back to 5-3-2 because of the fact that it looked like Newcastle had more energy playing 4-3-3, but is that the answer going forward? I just don't quite know if it is, because it isn't. It still feels that we haven't got this vision of what Steve Bruce is trying to build towards. That's the concern I've got. It's just like, right, we'll use this for now because it's sort of working.
It doesn't feel to me like Steve Bruce changes tactics to suit the opposition or to take any account into the opposition. He changes them when Newcastle result hit such a, you know, bad moment or whatever, and then it changes like that. It seems like, I mean, you have to point out that he changed things very effectively
in
the Leeds match, so we do have to sort of say that it's not that he's not capable of doing that, because he did, and Newcastle did look so much more solid when they went sort of 4-3-3 again, as you say, Hayden playing in his right place in midfield. It just seems strange that the way it seems to work is that it takes a bad result or run of results, and then it's changed, and then that formation is stuck with. There doesn't seem to be kind of fluidity in the way that these formations are played. I don't know, maybe that was just something that I thought there.
Well, I mean, we managed to get back in the game again, and Alan Saint-Maximin scored a fantastic goal, dribbling right across the box. Put me in mind a little bit of David Ginola, like that goal. It was a great goal, though. And he
praise indeed.
It did. And Ginola used to do that as well. We'd run across defenders and they didn't know what the hell to do with it. But it was a great goal. And he seemed to be the real spark in Newcastle's attack, and he's massively important to us. Charlie J on the real-time feed from the app has asked, if Saint-Maximin gets injured, what is the plan? I think run around in panic. I think that's all it is, isn't it? What do we do if Saint-Maximin gets injured, Chris? Like, seriously, though.
Well, that is the real concern. What's been refreshing so far this season about Saint-Maximin is, not only has he started all five games, he's finished all five games so far. We've had 5 90-minute performances from him, which
yeah, good
is
point.
Crucial for Newcastle, because that. Far too long either Sam Axman's been injured and out, or he hasn't. He's got to about the 60-minute mark and he's looked burned out and he's come off limping or looking shattered. So that is a positive. He looks fit. He looks hungry. He scored two goals and provided two assists. So he's far better ratio than in any of his previous two seasons at Newcastle. But there is a massive over-reliance on him. You remove Alan Saint-Maximin from the team on Friday and Newcastle wouldn't have had anything really in attack. He just makes them tick. He drags defenders out of position. He's been so much more direct, I think, this season as well. Playing through the middle, he's running towards goal, he's trying to bring his teammates into play. And him and Callum Wilson, as we've said all along, are absolutely crucial to Newcastle. And if at the minute they don't have Wilson, and so they're relying even more heavily on Alan Saint-Maximin, until Wilson comes back, that they need to keep Saint-Maximin fit, and they need to keep him in the side, because I don't think that they do have many options at all. Dwight Gayle didn't even come on again at the weekend. Steve Bruce was asked about him, and he gave an unusual response about saying, oh, it's partly to do with the formation we've been playing. Well, that formation does have two strikers up front. It does have two players up front. So it's like, well, if he's not going to play in that formation, when is he going to play? So that is a bit of a concern, that Steve Bruce doesn't seem to have any faith in his backup strikers, and therefore Alan Saint-Maximin staying fit, I think, is absolutely crucial to Newcastle's hopes this season.
He's been effective, hasn't he? I mean, that's, you know, we know that he's beautiful on the ball. We know that he can do amazing things. We know he's got a trick. We know he can do all the fancy stuff and drop his shoulders and beat people and things like that. But he's actually doing it in a way, in the right areas, and is being effective. And that's absolutely vital. It's been great to see. And he has to carry it on. I mean, he has to carry it on. As Chris says, with no Wilson, then there is such a dearth of alternatives. So yeah, bring it on. But I mean, no, it was, I mean, he actually I don't want to say I've been a cynic in terms of Saint-Maximin, because I haven't, because to go back to that beautiful Michael Chaplin phrase, the Bobby Dazzler, he has been our Bobby Dazzler for a couple of seasons. But for him to be doing it in a way that is actually making a difference in the bits of the pitch where you need him to make a difference.
George, would you agree that his decision making's kind of got a bit better as well? I think that's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's knowing when to pass the ball. It's knowing what, you know, it's that classic thing about, you know, I'm sure we all remember Ben Arthur doing some sort of extraordinary stuff on the ball, but he would very often give the ball away and put the whole team in trouble. And that's, you know, that is such a kind of key thing from players like that who can make a difference, is actually knowing when to do, you know, when to pass, when to beat your man, when to give it simple, when it to do that. And, you know, it's easier said than done, of course. I'm making it sound very straightforward. In the heat of the moment, when you're running at 95 miles an hour and you've got seven people around you. But no, my God, he was great to watch. He was great to watch against Leeds, wasn't he? And yeah, actually doing it, not just not threatening it, but actually doing it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right, this week saw two former Newcastle number 9 sit down for a very revealing chat. Alan Shearer spoke to Andy Carroll about goals and goal scorers, a frustrating 2 years under Steve Bruce, and leaving Newcastle United against his will for the second time, something that he clearly found very hard to take.
Obviously, it was a little bit upsetting for me that I wanted to be there, and all my family wanted me to be there, and then I'm suddenly not, and it was hard, but like I say, that's what it is. You know, you just got to get on with it, and that's how the contract ran out, and just got to move on and find elsewhere.
How do you reflect on the 2 days that you had there at Newcastle?
It was tough. Like I say, I wanted to play more games. I would play and then I would not play the next game. I would come on for the last minute of a game, and it was a bit stop-start, really. Mm. I remember, obviously, we played against West Ham, I think it was. We beat West Ham in the first game of the season, and probably to this day, it was probably the best game that we played as a team. Mm. And then the next game, I got took off at half-time for in the Brighton game, and I never played until Christmas.
Yeah.
And obviously, it was disappointing as well, because I think that we played really well the first game of the season, and the Brighton game, we were obviously disappointed with the result and the performance, but it was kind of blamed on me, really. I'm not playing again.
Did you think you'd get the number 9 shirt, or did you want the number 9 shirt when you come back? I mean, I know Joe Linton had it. I think you were probably seen as a bit of a mentor to him. What was he like, and do you think the number 9 shirt was a bit heavy for him?
I think obviously I actually think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's probably been playing out of position as a number 9. I don't think really is a number 9. He's probably out wide. Mm. And you see him in training, he finishes left and right feet. He scores with his head. He's a great finisher, and he's good. But as a number 9, I think he probably knows himself he's not really a number 9. And that's obviously why Callum's got it now.
I don't know whether you saw Match of the Day on Saturday night, but I thought they did all right at Old Trafford, but it was just, I'm frustrated with the club as it has been for a while now. I mean, I'd describe it as hollow and empty. How do you see Newcastle United?
I mean, it's hard because obviously all the lads, and I was in the dressing room with them, and everyone wants to do well. All the lads want to do well. We want to win. Every day we try and work hard, and there's just something missing. I don't really know what it is, but there's something missing where we don't get the results. We don't grind them out. We didn't. They still don't. I mean, there's some games last season where we shouldn't have lost and we should have dug deep and won and had something about us where we know how to win. Mm. And I think there's some games where we shouldn't have lost, that we shouldn't have drew, and we should have dominated games and we haven't.
Mm. But it's a good dressing room in there. You feel as if there's enough in there, and there's enough ability and a good enough attitude for them to do okay again this season, despite a difficult start.
It's been a hard start, yeah. And I think when I even speak to the lads now, the drive that they want and the what they want to do as a club and drive forward and win games, I don't think it's not there, and they've given up completely, because even we went through troubles last season and the season before as well.
Yeah,
and I think The lads are together. They stick together. We have meetings all the time and let each other. But there's something, I don't know what it is. There's something, obviously, in games, you think you just want to get a hold of the game, and we didn't.
Mm. Where and when were you happiest in your career?
Well, obviously, Newcastle the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 2010, brilliant year. Yeah, championship, and then played when we got promoted. I think being at home with my family, my friends, and being number 9 for Newcastle, I think it was everything, as you know.
Well, there we go. And that was just a small chunk of that conversation between Alan and Andy. But the whole thing is available to read over on theathletic.com. Lads, a bit of a shame for Big Andy, really, isn't it? The second come was never going to live up to the glory days. But it's interesting that he says he was fit and available mostly during his 2 seasons he was here, and he just didn't seem to get on the pitch enough, George.
No, and he said he was available for 40 of 43 games last season. I mean, obviously, it's in his interest now to sort of say that kind of stuff, because he is looking for another club and is waiting for the opportunity to come along. He's not retiring. I mean, I kind of found, you know, that last bit of that clip kind of quite sort of sad, really, isn't it? Because he was, you know, when back in 2010 when Newcastle came up, and then he carried on that brilliant form in the Premier League, and, you know, just absolutely bashing centre halves to bits and scoring goals and unstoppable and unplayable and all of those things. He's one of the most remarkable centre forwards I've seen in the flesh. And yes, I mean, I don't feel that, you know, he was a shadow of himself. It was an echo of that sort of stuff when he came back. His body was obviously sort of very different. I mean, from his perspective, he didn't get a lot of chances. I don't think it's a travesty of justice that he's not at Newcastle anymore. I hate the fact that he feels sort of disappointed and disillusioned by the way he left, and I think that's, you know, that's typical of a lot of people who are at Newcastle and leave. I mean, that's just the way things happen. But it's a fact that if he'd stayed, I mean, you would have put money on him coming on Friday night against Leeds because of the lack of options Newcastle still have. So
absolutely,
he would have been getting game time if he'd stayed with Wilson sort of being out. And I mean, he says he thinks he sort of made a difference when he did come on kind of last season, that the dynamics of the game changed and things like that. He pointed out the Tottenham game when Newcastle ended up drawing and he headed the ball against somebody's hand, didn't he? Eric Dier's hand. And it shouldn't have been a penalty, but things changed, and he obviously wanted to come on more and more often and more regularly. Again, I don't feel like that's a sort of travesty that he didn't, because we were talking a lot at the time that when he did come on, Newcastle would just look so very static. But they certainly didn't, make the most of him. And, in the same way that they're not built to make the most out of Joelinton, I don't think they're kind of built to make the most out of anybody, really. I mean, I think that's one of the problems about the club. I don't know what you think, but...
Chris, he made that point of, he mentioned the West Ham win at the start of last season, and while Andy wasn't awfully much of a goal threat, was he, last year, he did give us some, like George says, a different dimension. He kept defenders honest, and would he have been useful enough to an asset to keep on the payroll this season?
Well, the fact that they haven't replaced him, then yes, and this is even before you take into account the fact that they didn't sign the players that Steve Bruce wanted, because they weren't strikers. I mean, Bruce was asked directly during pre-season whether he felt he had enough forward options, and he said that he felt that he did, but the Newcastle have fewer options in attack this season than they did last season, and I agree with all of the... I sort of would have liked to have seen an upgrade on the Andy Carroll of now this summer. I would have liked to have seen a different option come in, but Newcastle didn't even try to sign another forward, and because it didn't, then they are down another option. And so, yeah, I think it would have been useful to have him. He could create chaos when he came on. He did score the goal against Leicester, and there were a few matches, I think, elsewhere in the interview, references the Spurs game when Newcastle were absolutely battered away at Spurs, but then he comes on and he contributes to the winning of the penalty, because he's the one who's trying to get up in the air, and suddenly other teams bring an extra defender back because they're worried, or they move deeper because Andy Carroll's there. And so, yes, almost in a negative sense, I would have liked to have seen Andy Carroll stay because of what has subsequently happened, and that's the fact that he hasn't really been replaced by anyone.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to forget, isn't it, George, just how devastating he was on his day, and what would you pay for a fully fit, fighting 22-year-old Andy Carroll in the current transfer market? What would he be worth now?
Oh, 35 million quid.
Oh, easily.
Depends on what you're comparing him to. I mean, compared to Joelinton.
Oh, my God, of course, yeah.
Well, I know, yeah, and he cost... I mean, he was so good, though, wasn't he? He was so... I mean, it's because this is so rare at Newcastle and has been for such a long time. You could watch him improve. You could see him improving game after game after game. He got better. And, maybe a lot of that was just him, developing. But you actually saw it happen. And he did. He absolutely terrified. I mean, he was a throwback even then.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because we just don't have that kind of player. But... they're very reminiscent of sort of the Duncan Ferguson type. And one of the things I loved in the interview with Alan, which I was very lucky to listen in to, he was at, in fact, I might have asked him right at the very end, sort of how much he'd had to adapt his game, because obviously Shearer had to adapt as he got older and his legs went, and he became far more static, and he was reliant on other people doing his, doing his running, and so he had to change. And the thing that Carroll said about that, which I kind of found in some ways you know, moving, but, you know, kind of sad, really. He sort of said, oh, yeah, you know, it's like Sam Allardyce said that to us. He said, you know, you've got to change. You don't need to go for that ball. You don't need to go for every ball. And he said he had no, he didn't know how to do that. And he said, on the one hand, he's right. I know that he was right. It's like, if the ball is there, I don't have to go for it. Or, you know, I don't have to give 100% for that particular challenge. I could give less. And he says, I didn't know how to do that. I only ever knew was to go for every ball and to give it 100%. And that's probably why he's been injured. I mean, you know, that might very well be a correlation, not knowing how to manage yourself. But then again, at the same time, 100% Andy Carroll was extraordinary. I mean, absolutely extraordinary. I found that quite sad, really.
He was that player, wasn't he, though? And I love these type of players where all they cared about was getting that ball into the net. And it was, if I have to take everything in the stadium with me to get it into that net, St John's ambulance man, hot dog stand, you know, referee, everything's going in there and I'm making sure the ball goes in the net. And he was just a human battering ram, wasn't he? Astonishing to watch on his day. Absolutely incredible. Right then, up next for Newcastle is a cheeky little visit down to Vicarage Road on Saturday for a 3 p.m. kickoff against Watford. We've had a couple of questions. One of them was, do we think we'll stick with four at the back for Watford? And we mentioned this earlier on, Chris. Do you think Bruce is likely to change things up tactically, or do you think we'll just stick with good old faithful 5-3-2 and see what happens?
Yeah, so this is a question from Aaron W. So Aaron, I do think that he'll change to a four-man defence. Just the way that Newcastle gained a bit of momentum doing it, the way, just speaking when he spoke after the game. I mean, what he did say, to be fair, and Bruce, what he said is that we need to have more than one system and be able to change. And I've said for a while I want to change between having a four and a five. But I think going to Watford, going to a team where Newcastle really need to win. Watford obviously had a positive result against Norwich at the weekend. I think just because Newcastle looked so much more comfortable when they, or at least more balanced when they shifted to that, I think he will move to it this weekend. With I'll just put my proviso out there again. I think they look partly so comfortable in it because they were against a Leeds team who did not adapt to them, and a Leeds team who were expecting to play the five-man defence and didn't change because of that. I don't think it'll be as easy to do that from the start against Watford, but I think I would change it, whether it's to the same formation, or at least I would change to four-man defence, I think.
They just looked more comfortable there, and suddenly there were less players out of position, it felt. It was great seeing Hayden back where he should be playing and, you know, throwing himself into tackles and clearances and things like that. And I just thought, My concern with the other system is that it's just been found out from the end of last season, and, you know, the two wing backs who aren't really wing backs and things like that. So I think they will stick with it. My problem with Steve Bruce and formations is that he seems to sort of stick to them until Newcastle get beaten, and then it's like starting all over again. And I'm not sure that's very sustainable. But anyway, I've thought that for a long time.
Well, in terms of the result, it kind of feels like Steve Bruce might have ridden out the storm and had a bit of a stay of execution for a few weeks with, as far as the fans are concerned. But, you know, the fans will want at least a point for Watford, won't they? And the response to that will be interesting, to say the least. Final quick question from Callum K before we finish up. Who are we playing in the EFL Cup this week? Couldn't see us in the draw, despite not losing to Burnley. You should be all over this, George. Who are we playing?
Yeah, I'll just have to check. I'll have to check the fixtures. Well, maybe we've just retired undefeated. Should be the Newcastle way moving forward.
Retained the belt.
Exactly. Let's not expose ourselves to humiliation further down the line. Let's just retire from the EFL Cup undefeated. Lovely.
You don't want to be exposing yourself, do you, Chris? Absolutely not. That's the last thing you want. Anyway. Just time now to slow down your heart rates and dip your toes into the pool of tranquility, which is reasons to be cheerful. Any reasons to be cheerful, chaps, after Friday night's chaos, George?
We're still persevering with this nonsense, are we?
Apparently so.
Well, I will.
I can bring the quiz back if you want, George.
No,
well, shut your face and get on with it then.
Let's do it the Steve Bruce way. Let's stick with this until it's gone way beyond the point of tenability. Then we'll bring the quiz back. Stick with that until I've lost 10 in a row. Then we'll go back to reasons to be cheerful.
Yeah.
Or we could just do reasons to be, I don't know, pissed off. Well, that's just a podcast, isn't it? That's brilliant. Right, reasons to be cheerful. I will mention Jillinton. We heard Andy Carroll talk about what a brilliant finisher he is. I'm not sure I can see that from what I've seen over 2 and a bit years, but I did think he played very well against Leeds. I mean, apart from the obvious bit, which was not shooting very well, but he... But he... And so normally I wouldn't normally say this because I do think that the shooting bit is the most important, but I do think he made a positive contribution to the team, and I think without him they would have struggled. He did have some physicality. He put himself about. I think he offered himself, and I think he caused Leeds some problems. So I will say him because I've given him a lot of stick. I mean, not because I think he's a terrible human being. I blame the club for this 100%. I don't blame him for it, but I thought he actually played very well. So I'm going to say John Linton is a reason to be cheerful.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I'm not quite as positive on the Joe Linton front, but I'm not gonna necessarily fully agree with
you. You're so negative. I was scraping the barrel there. I mean, I was absolutely... It was a barrel, and I was scraping it with my fingernails, and that's what I came up with.
I do agree that he was better, but I still think relative, that's almost relative. I just think there is more to come from, and that is the frustration I still have with Joe Linton, is I do actually think there is more to come from him. So I'll say that as a positive, but my positive would be the obvious one, and that would be Alan Saint-Maximin. And I do think that I agree with what George said earlier. There were points certainly towards the start of last season.
Have I not already said him? Have I not already said him in this segment this season? You can't just repeat. I mean, I could have done that. That's too easy. We've done a big thing
George,
on him.
But George, when he is the only reason to be cheerful, that's going to get repeated.
I did like it when he said on Twitter, because Shearer said, what did he said? GTFI Alan Saint-Maximin and clappy hands, something
get
like that.
Pin.
I can't think.
Yeah,
yes, exactly. And he said, "Thank you," but what does GTFI mean? So he didn't understand that. So a lot of people then replied with what it was. I was trying to think of like an alternative GTFI that somehow would have kind of characterised Newcastle. Greg's Friday.
Gosh, terrible football, isn't it?
Yeah, but I couldn't think of... Maybe I should have done that. But anyway,
just to quickly finish my point.
The reason I'm
positive about him is that he looks focused, he looks determined at the moment, he looks like he has a point to prove and he wants to be the player who is going to make the difference for Newcastle, and that's crucial because he is the only player they have with Callum Wilson out into at the moment who will make a difference. So at Watford, if Newcastle can get the ball to him on the break in decent positions, I think he gives Newcastle a real opportunity. It's going to be him and Ismaïla Sarr obviously going to be the two players everyone's going to be talking about going into this weekend. Two players who've started the season very, very well and who I think are going to be crucial to both sides' chances. So let's just hope that Alan Saint-Maximin's the player who comes out on top in that individual battle, even though I know they're not directly playing against one another, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely. Well, for me, reason to be... Well, unbeaten in the cup, I think that's a reason to be cheerful.
Yeah, great.
We're not Norwich. That's quite a good one. And also, 20 years ago this week, Roy Keane tried to intimidate Alan Shearer and failed spectacularly. And that's always worth watching on YouTube if you get the chance. And do you know the story behind this? I saw Alan Shearer in a talk in a while ago, and he told the story about that incident. And apparently the reason that Roy Keane lost his marbles and flipped so spectacularly was because when he threw the ball at Alan Shearer and it hit him in the back of the head, Alan Shearer turned around and said to Roy Keane, "Would you like me to sign that for you, son?" And that was the point when the rage hit. Anyway,
that's just beautiful. That is just beautiful football pettiness. I love that. That's just what I want. I just want pettiness all the time. Gorgeous.
Right, that's it, chaps. We'll be back next week for another episode of Pod on the Tyne. Thanks a lot, Chris, and George, take care of yourselves, have a lovely week, and thanks to everybody at home for ticking along with us. Bye for now.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.